There is no goodbye like a final goodbye. There are all kinds of goodbyes. There are the goodbyes we use when we say to people, you know, see you later, or I'll call you later, or the don't call me, I'll call you later goodbyes. But final goodbyes, they're different. The ones that take place in an emergency room or a hospice room or at the bedside of someone we know and love who's dying, those are different goodbyes, because final goodbyes means that we're not going to experience the presence of someone that we've cared for and someone that's cared for us. That's what Maundy Thursday is about, in part. It was Jesus saying his final goodbye to his disciples, to people he had spent 3 years with, day in and day out, people he had laughed with, people he had cried with, people that he had done life with, people who meant something to him, people he taught and shaped, and people that he loved. People who had grown under his influence. It's a hard thing to say goodbye to people like that. People that you've poured your life into. People who have needed you. And now it's time to say goodbye, knowing that your absence is going to make a difference. I can only imagine when the time comes for me to say goodbye to my family. The hardest part I can think about in saying goodbye is not leaving this earth, it's leaving them and hoping that they'll be okay. It was that kind of goodbye that Jesus engaged in on that evening, that Maundy Thursday. And it came after a very long emotional week. Came after Palm Sunday when Jesus rode into Jerusalem, and as the people cheered for him, and he was moved to tears, not because of the sign of their great devotion, but because he understood that they didn't understand, that they were waiting for a king to come and change their circumstances, and he had come to change their lives, to change their hearts. It had come after Monday when he went into the temple and became so upset and frustrated over what was happening to his father's house that he was moved from frustration to just outrage. It came after Tuesday, when he had engaged in the olive discourse, when he had for the last time preached to the crowds, when he had gathered them together and shared his last sermon with them. It came after what we call Silent Wednesday, when the Bible doesn't tell us about any activity, and we only surmise that it was a time to rest and recharge, and a time to prepare for the end of the week, a time to prepare for saying goodbye to his disciples. And so that's what he did on Maundy Thursday. He gathered his disciples together, and he did it in the most intimate of ways. He did it at a dinner. I remember when I was making my first farewell, I thought, at retirement, and I was thinking, you know, how do I do this? So the first thing I did is I wanted to meet with the deacons, people I had ministered to for a number of years, and I wanted it to be something that respected our service. And the only thing I could think of was to have them over my house for a dinner. That's what you do when you say goodbye with people you love. You look for an intimate way to say it. That's the best you can do with good friends. And that's what Jesus did. He gathered them together to have a meal together. Now, obviously, the significance of the meal they shared in was Passover, the celebration of God protecting his people from the 10th plague that he put upon Egypt in order to get the Pharaoh to release his people. It was that celebration that signified God caring for his people, engaged with his people, liberating his people. And that's what Jesus was doing, liberating us from sin. And so he gathered with them at a meal. And it's at that meal in John 13 that we pick up the story. And so if we could put that up there. Well, while they're looking for it, let me just pull it up. And just so you know, it should say Maundy Thursday. Got it? Okay. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, and he took off his outer clothing. You might kind of say he took off his shirt. He still had, you know, what we would call a T-shirt on or an undergarment on, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "You do not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." And so he engages in this act. And he says to Peter, "You'll get it later." Almost a mystery. Almost a call of submission. Peter, "No, you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus answered, "Those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean." So what's going on? Jesus is trying to show them something. Peter misses it and says, "Okay, if you're going to do it, then give me a full bath." Now, when Jesus says that you're already clean, what does he mean? The symbolism of what took place in their baptism, the symbolism of having been cleansed, the symbolism of having received him has already made them clean. And yet, recognizing that there's still a part of them that has to constantly be clean, and that's their feet. Because it's with our feet that we do or don't do the work of Christ. It's with our feet that we pick up the dirt and the soil of the earth around us. I mean, that's what we deal with every day. As we walk on this earth, we have to constantly be washing this earth off of us so that it doesn't permanently stain us. And you are clean. though not every one of you. For he knew who was going to betray him, and that was why he said not everyone was clean. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes, and he returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you? He asked. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for it is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master. No servant is greater than his master. What was Jesus trying to say to them? I mean, as I said in the beginning, this was his goodbye message to them. So what's the message? And I want you to see it. It's brilliant. His goodbye message to them was simply this. Be servants. Be servants. Now, why would that make up a goodbye message? Number one, because it encapsulated everything he taught them. He taught them to be obedient. That's what a servant does. He taught them to be humble. That's the stance a servant takes. He taught them to not get hung up on the earthly things, but on the things of heaven. He taught them to love their enemies. He taught them what it meant to sacrifice. He taught them what it meant to be loyal. And telling them and saying goodbye to them, saying, be a servant, he did it because it would encapsulate everything that he had tried to teach them. But what's more, he told them to be servants because in being a servant, he would never leave them. Because it was in being a servant that they would meet him over and over again. That's the reality. When we act like servants, we meet him in our hearts. When we care for other people, Jesus is with us. It's when we're not serving him. It's when we're serving ourselves that his absence takes place within us. Listen to what Paul writes in Philippians chapter 2. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God. Can you pull up that first line, that last line? As something to be grasped. Next. For your own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. Being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even on a cross. Jesus said in his final goodbye, be a servant. Later, Paul would write, have the same mindset of Christ, who humbled himself and made himself nothing, who set aside his godly advantages to become just like us. Because that's what a servant does. A servant has a mindset of priority. They understand that their number one priority in this world, in their relationships, is to serve. They have the mindset of sacrifice. Because a servant knows you sacrifice. You sacrifice your own desires. You sacrifice your time and your resources. You sacrifice whatever it takes to get the job done. A servant understands humility. You don't see servants walking around and telling the people they serve, get it yourself. they get it, that it's their job to get it. Servants have the mindset of unity. Servants don't engage in dissension, but they look to unite. They look to support. Servants understand the mindset of glory, that they make the connection that to serve God is to bring his glory upon this earth. It's a hard thing to be a servant. We're not built to be servants. In our very nature, we want to be served more than we want to serve. There's a story of a woman who was making breakfast for her two kids, Kevin and Ryan. And so she was making pancakes, and the kids were fighting about who was going to get the first pancake. And so the mother said, well, you know, you need to be like Jesus, because if Jesus was here, he would simply say, give the first pancake to my brother. And the kids just sat there quiet. And finally, Kevin turned over to Ryan and said, okay, you be like Jesus. That's our nature. We want to be served. And then maybe if we have the time and all our needs are met, we'll try to serve the people we like. And Jesus blows our mind because he does the opposite. He serves a traitor. He serves a person who would later deny him. He serves a doubter. He serves a crook who would hang next to him. He serves a hostile crowd who would cheer for him to be crucified. He serves all the kind of people that wouldn't even show up in our minds as people to serve. A final goodbye, and Jesus, he sums it up so brilliantly in saying, be a servant. Serve one another as I have served you. What does it mean to be a servant? It means if you see something that has to be done, do it. I was talking to a gentleman, and probably in his latter 60s, and hadn't been that great to his wife for most of his life, and finally woke up to that reality. And so he was telling me, he said, you know, my wife could come up to me at any time and say, hey, could you take out the trash? And I'd say, yeah, okay. And then I would sit there and continue to watch TV. And maybe a few hours later, I'd go take out the trash. He said, but the other day, I nailed it. I was watching the game, and she said, hey, could you take out the trash? And the first thing I did is I just got up and took out the trash. And yet, as we talked about it, I said, you know, it's funny you're telling me this, because I had a mother and son in here the other day, and I was teaching him that. Because his mother said, you know, every time I ask him to do something, he says yes, but then he waits for hours before he decides to go and do it. Now, that looks okay on a 13-year-old, but not when you're 68. And yet we all fall into those tendencies. The reality is this: when you see something that needs to be done, do it. It didn't happen in front of you by just plain circumstance. It's a calling. It's a calling by God. It's a calling by Jesus to say, I want you to walk with me. I don't want you to be distant from me. I don't want you to be absent from me. I want you to walk with me. When you see something to do, do it. When you see something to give, give it. How many times have you been in a situation where somebody shared a financial need and you thought for a moment, I could probably swing that. But you kept silent because you thought, yeah, but if something comes up for me, I might not be able to handle it. I might not be able to cover it. I got to cover my bases here. And we miss the call of Christ. If you have something to give, give it. Because everything that you've been given was given to you by Him for such a time as that. And yet you can miss it. If there's something needs to be said, say it. Don't ever think that your voice doesn't count. You could make the most confident person in the world feel like $1 million by just coming and saying something kind to them, by just complimenting them or encouraging them on something they've done. There are times, trust me, people need to hear your voice. They need you to serve them. If there's something that needs to be said, say it. If there's someone who needs to be loved in the name of Christ, love them that they might see Him. If you do, you'll do everything He taught. And if you do, He'll walk with you in your heart, and you'll see Him in the work of your hands. And the text says, Jesus says, He'll be with you in a very special way. Look what we see in verse 17. Verse 17, right up, there we go. Go up one. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. Now that you know this, now in these moments when I've had the chance physically to say goodbye, it's not really goodbye. Because if you do them, I'll always be with you. If you do them, your feet will always be clean, just as I have cleaned you in my blood. If you do them, you'll walk with me, and I'll walk with you. Let's join our hearts in prayer.